Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Hello and welcome to Soccer to the Max and U.S. Men's National Team after show, sort of, also podcast for the week because we didn't get to do it on Monday. But yes, I am your host, Sean Garmer, and the U.S. National Team has defeated Ecuador 1-0 on a fluky goal by Yossi Zardes. And here to talk about that and some other things with me is, of course, is the awesome Rachel McCrigger.
It had to be Jossie. It just, oh my.
Now officially part of the NWSL, like media?
Yep, Media Association and the North American Soccer Reporters. Cha-ching.
Congratulations.
Woohoo!
We are official now.
Let's see how that goes. Bada bing, bada boom.
And, of course, Mr. Eric Watkins as well.
That one really had nil-nil written all over it.
Well, let's talk about why. Because Ecuador was deciding that they wanted to just put people behind the ball and park the old bus, as you would say. And they were very happy to do that. They went down 1-0. There was no sense of urgency at all. I mean, they had their counterattack opportunities, but they were very minimal and basically just decided to make life hard for the U.S. Even then, that first 20 to 30 minutes was rather interesting. You had both the wide guy, you had Tyler Adams being a right back, right wing back, right interior back. I don't know. He kept going forward and going various places. I thought Aaron Long played pretty well for having to cover for him a lot as well. And I don't know. What else did you see there, Rachel?
Well, I saw Tim Ream give up a balls left and right in the final third. So that was fun and interesting to watch. I thought, he gets a lot of flack, but I thought Will Trapp was pretty good for the most part. Really liked John Brooks, really liked seeing him communicate with everybody. He was talking the whole time he was out there, really just providing that veteran leadership. I hope on Tuesday we see him with Matt Miazga, because I think that's your center back pairing. I don't think Omar Gonzalez is going to start that game. I don't see why he would, to be honest with you. I think he's just there right now as an extra training body.
I think he'll come in as a sub.
Yeah, maybe for like the last 20 or something. Yeah, possibly. I thought Morris was just okay. I really hope he does something a little bit more on Tuesday. But granted, he's back in the fold after not playing for the national team in like a year and a half. Almost. Jossie was quiet the whole game, but except for that fluke goal. So again, it had to be Jossie.
Yeah. So if you didn't see it, Jossie Zardes basically just took an opportunity of the goalkeeper kind of being asleep, and he kind of lofted it over him, and he made a big. The dude's 6'5", the Ecuador keeper. He made a big deal out of that when it really shouldn't have been, and it went over his head somehow. And that was pretty kind of disappointing for him, because he made a tremendous kick save on perhaps the best like combination play we saw all game between Pulisic, McKennie, and then finally getting it to Areola, and he just wasn't able to get it in thanks to that kick save. They did have a goal disallowed, which was kind of nitpicky on the offside, but you can make a case either way.
bad. Yeah. I didn't really for Ariola in that game a lot. I thought he was kind of shaky. His touches aren't good. Like, his first touches, mainly, they're just not good.
Yeah, I mean, he was there. He was active, and he was getting wide and getting passes in. I think, like you said, though, if his first touch was better, you would have perhaps seen better things. Had the goal gone in, I think maybe the game is different. But he didn't.
He's not a goal scoring guy. He's an assist guy.
Right. Well, Eric also kind of got a bit of a break on Weston McKennie only getting an ankle sprain. That was a bit scary there towards the end.
That ankle, it looked, especially on the replay, I don't know if it was a magical slow motion or what, but I thought that ankle kind of turned a little bit in an awkward direction, and it's like...
It did.
It looked a lot worse than a sprain, but then again, I've had like one or two ankle sprains like that before, and the first couple of days, especially right afterwards, that's when it's going to hurt the worst. But a little bit, alternate some ice and heat, it'll be fine. But overall, I think that was the one biggest negative. The one real thing that I noticed is with Ecuador not only parking the bus, but being very, very compact, it was a very big problem of getting that first touch, because we were great in getting the ball out wide, as you two mentioned, but the crosses, had they been a split second earlier, maybe some of those combinations were there. Had it been like with Areola's touches a little bit lighter, those plays were there. It seemed like they gave too much of an opportunity for Ecuador to come in and make everything congested up the middle.
Yeah, I mean, the few corners that you had weren't great either from Pulisic. I mean, he was his usual good self for the most part. I mean, he was the one, when he'd get the ball, he's the most dangerous man on the field. I mean, Antonio Valencia is pretty fast. And he, like, shook him out of his boots trying to get the ball out of the corner there. And that one there in the second half, and I was kind of like, that's not an easy guy to make do that. So, Pulisic is going to be giving a lot of people fits when he gets to... He does it already at Dortmund. He's going to be doing a lot of people fits in the Premier League when he gets to Chelsea in the summer for next season. That's going to be fun to see how that goes. You know, I think for the most part, you got to be kind of happy if you're Greg Berhalter. It's good that, you know, what I appreciated from Greg Berhalter in this is that he... Immediately, the first question he gets asked, he already knows what the answer is to what Ecuador are doing. And I think maybe the change in players, perhaps, they mentioned that there was players didn't get into like a night before. They didn't have a lot of time to gel with each other. And then once they make the changes, I think... You didn't see enough urgency there to try to get that goal until it just kind of happened for Zardes. But they tried to break him down. But, I mean, Ecuador was just really good defensively, and they usually always are.
Yeah, and I think overall the effort, you could tell that things were being discombobulated, and the announcers mentioned that. It's like they could only communicate either like on Skype or through different chats or phone calls and everything, but not getting that cohesiveness in training. So the result for that isn't bad, but it still leaves us wondering, especially me, what is really there with training under our belt that we can build off of.
Anybody have any specific comments on the Tyler Adams experiment? I don't know, I just like him better in midfield. It didn't seem to be a benefit at all. And this is with an Ecuador team that was staying back the whole time. Yeah, he had a lot of room to operate, but as was mentioned several times, you play a team, perhaps like you're going to see with Chile on Tuesday, they are very known for attacking constantly. So you're not going to see that constant, oh, Tyler Adams can go forward and then, oh, somebody covers him and then he has time to go back there and take the ball again and do something. I just don't know how that helps you at all when you play the teams that you need to play, even in CONCACAF, or God forbid you get out of CONCACAF and decide you want to take the invite to Copa America next year. Like, just, I just don't see what benefit that gives when it's not what he's doing with his regular team either. Just, yeah, I'm all for experimenting, but yeah, just.
We have defenders who are defenders, who their job play along that back line. We have other players, a very large pool, along the midfield, up front, and you can even do attacking along the wing and this and that. This isn't Football Manager, this isn't Top 11. You don't need to switch. I don't know what it is with playing these players so unnaturally out of position. It's like, what are you doing for yourself? What are you doing for the team? And what are you really doing for them?
Yep.
Especially when you have a talent like DeAndre Yedlin. I mean, why would you put him on the bench? And I'm not knocking Tyler Adams, and I'm not saying Tyler Adams isn't talented. He's just talented in the midfield. That's the thing. He's talented in the midfield. DeAndre Yedlin is talented at right back. It's a U.S. national team thing, not just the men. It's with the women, too. It's just everywhere. It's playing players out of position. We're really, like, unless it's a dire circumstance, we're, like, the only nation that does it willingly.
Yeah, it's weird because it's not like DeAndre Yedlin. We know he can fit that spot. It's like right back is not one of those things that you're worried about, right? So, like, I don't understand what the need is. Like, I kind of understood it when you were doing it with Graham Zusi, when you needed another guy. And maybe that's what it is. Like, maybe Berhalter feels like with Adams being younger that he thinks he can count on Adams to come for more of these international dates and, say, Gold Cup or something like that, where maybe Yedlin gets taken away for that. Because he's more in the first team or used, even though Adams is now pretty much on Leipzig's first team all the time. In fact, you know, when we had the podcast last time, we talked about how he's kind of a lucky charm for them. So, I mean, obviously you fall in and out of form. I don't know what that internal logic is there for Berhalter, but yeah, it's weird. It's not a spot that I'm sitting there going, oh, we need to fix that right now. So
no, that's left back.
Yeah,
that's the
exactly.
Left back position. Like, I mean, Aaron Long, is he good? Yeah, but he's like MLS good. He's not, you know, I hate to bring him up all the time. He's not Fabian Johnson good. He's, who are some others? I can even put Matt Miazga there. Like, he's just, you put him up against a team like Mexico and a team like Sweden, maybe, you're not getting the same result that happened tonight. He's MLS good.
Well, you got your boy Viafania, who didn't get called in, who plays there too.
But he's not the answer either. That spot is just so finicky. It's like, oh, that spot is a nightmare.
Well, I mean, at least, if anything, it's another win for the U.S. Men's National Team. So 3 out of 3 so far during the Berhalter reign. And you've got a pretty good test with Chile on Tuesday. We'll be doing a little short, like, game review there for that game. But we're going to move on and discuss some things on the women's national team side. We'll go back to the men at the under-23 level in a little bit, but let's talk about the women's national team. They have named their team for the April friendlies, which, if I'm not mistaken, are the final friendlies until you get the World Cup roster and you get your World Cup friendlies. So here is who is on that team. A lot of the usual suspects, along with some folks that are coming back in. So that's always... Especially one named Allie Krieger, who might finally get her 100 caps after long awaited
for her. Knowing Jill Ellis, she won't even... Oh, she won't even play her. Guaranteed. Oh! Obviously
not. Let's just run down who is here really quick. You got the three that were on the team last time in goal, Adriana Frank, Ashlyn Harris, and Alyssa Nair. You got the defenders. She brought 7, Abby Dahlkemper, Tina Davidson, Crystal Dunn, Allie Krieger, Becky Sauerbrunn, Casey Short, and Emily Sonnet. If I'm not mistaken, Davidson didn't come for the She Believes either. So,
no, she did.
Oh, she did?
Okay. She didn't play the first game, though.
That's what it was, because that's the one I watched. Julie Ertz, Lindsay Horan, who is back after an injury, Roosevelt, Allie Long, Samantha Mewis, Andy Sullivan, Emma Calzer-Boney are your midfielders. And you got Tobin Heath, Carly Lloyd, Jessica McDonald, Alex Morgan, Kristen Press, Mallory Pugh, and Megan Rapinoe. They're in the forward. So, I mean, it's a lot of the names you know at this point. But you're playing Germany and Australia, two really tough teams.
Belgium.
Or Belgium, sorry. That's Belgium. I'm looking at the flag, and when it's in those little icons, they kind of look the same
on Twitter. Yeah, because I think it's like similar colors. It's just oriented different.
It's the same colors. Yeah, it's like Russia and France.
Exactly. I'm not looking at screen size flags of this.
This roster, where to start? Really hope for the goalkeepers that Adriana Franch gets another chance in goal. A lot of people were knocking her after her She Believes Cup performance against England, but she didn't really do a bad job, to be honest with you. And you can't really knock her because that was her first appearance, and you know, you don't know how she's gonna bounce back. So I hope she gets that. Glad to see Alyssa Nair's injury during She Believes wasn't serious. Obviously, she is that clear-cut number one. And right now, I think it's a wide-open battle between Ashlyn Harris and Franch for that second position. Defense looks good. Still irritated to see Crystal Dunn as a defender. Again, going back to these playing out of position topics and conversations we have. I mean, I know it's going to happen, but, you know, Jill Ellis, she's going to start Crystal Dunn over Allie Krieger at a defender position, even though Allie Krieger is the natural defender and Crystal Dunn is an attacking mid. So that, I mean, that's just annoying, but that, you know, it's just kind of the way it is. Good to see Lindsay Horan back from her injury. Really hope that McCall-Zerboni actually gets some playing time this time. And the one thing that I want from that forward selection is to actually not see Carly Lloyd for a game, because I feel like Jill Ellis only puts her in just because of her name, but she does nothing to help productivity. Also, Alex Morgan needs to get this 100th goal, because I'm not waiting 2 more games again.
Well said there, for sure. You also want that, like, out of your mind, right? Of, you know, you gotta go through that pomp and circumstance of, oh, this is the 100th goal, and, like, get past that so that when you get to those friendlies that are right there at the World Cup and the World Cup itself, you're not having to have that bug you, all that stuff. I mean, yes, this is also still, these two games are also still before NWSL starts, so they're still in preseason here, and maybe she'll get into banging form during, you know, NWSL early, and it won't really be a problem, and she'll get that out of there if she doesn't do it in these two games, but we'll see how that goes.
It's one of those things, and a lot of times when you have these significant milestones, and I've seen it before across a lot of sports, it's that exact weight, the magnitude of it, and it becomes a bit of a mental block. So unfortunately, don't be too surprised if we're still waiting on it after all this.
And Australia is bringing a banging roster. I mean, their roster is like fantastic, totally loaded with talent. And Belgium's bringing the element of surprise because the United States has never played them before. And they're not a bad team.
Yeah. Hey, you never know, right? That's what's fun about these friendlies sometimes. You never know. And it's the U.S. You know, you're always going to be getting, for the most part, you're getting, you know, a tough match every time. You know, unless you're just completely outclassing them. But I don't know. With Belgium, and certainly not with Australia, you won't get that here. So, yeah, won't be too long until we'll talk about those. But let's look into the future a little bit. We haven't even gotten to the 2019 Women's World Cup, but there's already hints at interested countries for the 2023 Women's World Cup, and quite a few in South America as well as all over the globe. And number one is Argentina. Obviously, you know, men's power, not quite that for the women yet, but would be interesting. Australia, of course, having that heck of a team that we've seen come on strong recently, then have the World Cup in the next cycle there with the next group of players coming up and the veterans still around. I mean, that would be amazing for that country. Bolivia, Brazil, Colombia, all three South American countries there. Of course, Brazil, we know that they've been not so much lately, but of course, still a powerhouse. And would be interesting to see what happens there. Japan, of course, they're getting the 2020 Olympics, so then getting the Women's World Cup 3 years later would be cool for them. New Zealand, I'm waiting for there.
I don't know. I'm tempted, but it's like there's too much of a red, white, and blue colored elephant in the room for me to take advantage of this one. Besides, still saying male girls, it doesn't feel right. It's never given me that punch.
We still have to. We still have the terrible Christchurch attacks that aren't too long ago from the last time we did the podcast. So
yeah,
like we gotta let that one go for a little bit.
And a quick kind of semi point of viewer side note. You see how long it took them to realize, hey, maybe certain things aren't good for people to have, and everyone's going with it. DC, get a damn clue. Anyway, continue.
They seem to have a lot more unity in the country than we have, of course. Helps when your country is much smaller.
Yeah, fair.
South Africa, which, of course, hosted a Men's World Cup in 2010, and South Korea with North Korea. So, I don't know, man. Like, that relationship could sour by the time you get to 2023. That's why they're at the bottom of the list, I think.
It's not even the relationship can sour. A, it's North Korea. B, it's North Korea. C, it's North Korea. D, do you really want them unifying, especially when it's North Korea? Let's consider this carefully, people.
If you didn't get the point there, Eric lets you know numerous times. Rachel, any country that like you'd really like to see the World Cup in next?
I have a top three.
Okay.
New Zealand would be my number three. I just think that would be really cool. Japan would be number two because I think, you know, they just have such a deep history within the Women's World Cup, and just to finally be able to see that be celebrated would be really cool. And then honestly, I think South Africa would be really neat. They had a really good 2010 tournament, and so I'd like to see a comeback. I mean, their women qualified for the tournament for the first time ever this year, so that'd be kind of a nice boost. I want to say Argentina, but like, you know, their team captain, Estefani Benini, I think that's how you say her, Estefania Benini, she had come out and said, you know, our federation isn't behind us a lot of the time. Well, if you have a player coming out and saying, hey, our federation isn't behind our program, that's not a good look.
Well, let me tell you something from experience. If there's one thing the Argentinians are not going to say no to is money. So you tell them they're going to have a World Cup in Argentina, they don't care which gender it is if it's going to bring people to the country and make them spend money there. So,
and I mean, look, Japan, I can get into shenanigans. New Zealand, I have connections to where I could get into shenanigans. Argentina, I can get into a lot crazy different shenanigans. So I can't argue with those. But even Brazil, I don't know.
Well, Brazil, you can always get into shenanigans.
The shenanigans aren't the problem. I can go to Brazil anytime and get into shenanigans. And I even know certain places in Sao Paulo, especially Avenida Indianapolis, that I specifically can avoid. There are certain things that go down on that street that aren't my thing. I personally do not judge. It's just not my style. However, go ahead.
I was going to say, why New Zealand and not Australia, Rachel?
Honestly, either or for me, I don't know. I just like New Zealand. I like the, aspect of New Zealand.
John Oliver does say that a lot of people don't know that New Zealand's on the map sometimes.
Well, that's because New Zealand isn't on a lot of maps.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying, you'll certainly know where they are for a month in June that year because they'll be on TV a lot.
I like that Maori thing too, the what's that called? Haka.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's cool.
And in between matches, if I can't get into New Zealand shenanigans, I can hop across the Tasman. I'm right in Melbourne or the whole state of Victoria. Hop along, take a flight up the East Coast and get into different parts of Australian shenanigans. It works for me.
Hey, there you go. So we'll have to find out. I'm sure at some point, perhaps by the time we get to the 2019 World Cup happening, they'll have chosen who the host is for the next
one. I don't think they choose until October.
Oh, they don't?
No. For some reason, they don't choose it before the tournament like the guys do.
I guess, you still have, years to plan, so.
Well, that's because it's less of a voting system that's involved with the women's tournament than it is with the men's. That would be my only guess.
And in a lot of these countries, you already have stadiums. So it's not like Qatar where you're really having to, from that moment that you announce it till the day that they have the World Cup, which I can't believe that the decision to put 48 teams still hasn't been finalized or not. That's weird. But
wow, I really needed to have done that in front of my webcam. Thank you, Wish. I've ordered one, and it'll be here in a couple of weeks. Why the hell did I just make the... Never mind. Long story short, it's money. That's why.
Yeah, no, certainly. Mr. Infantino is all about the money. That's what he's always been about. And, he's always if it happens, hey, win. If it doesn't happen, whatever. It's a win for Infantino anyway, baby. So
isn't he Italian?
Yeah, that's just the way that dude is. He's just weird.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. That's pretty much Italy in a nutshell. Again, nothing against the place.
He's still making Seth Blatter look terrible, though. He's only been there a short amount of time, and he's already doing wonders with the world's game that Mr. Blatter was not.
Well, that's because, again, Sepp Blatter came in when the organization was nothing and realized, I can make a whole bunch of money. And then the other 40 years were history.
That too. So, speaking of money, the U.S. Women's National Team, they filed that lawsuit. We talked about it on the last pod. And, now Carlos Cordero apparently figured out that he is the USS Soccer, the president of the U.S. Soccer Federation, and he's got a answer, He says he is somehow surprised at the lawsuit by the women's national team. I don't know, Cordero, really?
How can you participate in an election, be head of an organization you're involved with, knowing that this problem has been very public, deservedly so.
He ran an equal pay ticket.
Yeah. But
he's surprised. I don't know. This man is sometimes, like, you know, you don't have to necessarily always go by party lines. You can speak for yourself, but I guess this guy's just like the orange man. But
yet people wonder why politics make me want to punch things.
Well, you know what? Sometimes the orange man says too much, and then we get into other. He's like a doctor with the worst bedside manner ever. So you know, it's like you have to like triple excuse him, and I don't think that's enough. But anyway, this is the wrong. We're in the like politics show today. So, his response to this. To this entire thing is, while we believe the current agreement is fair and equitable, blah, we are committed to working with our U.S. Women's National Team players and understanding specifically where they believe improvement is needed. As we continue to review the lawsuit, we thought it was imperative to reach out to team leaders to better understand their thoughts and concerns, and they're going to try to resolve this matter. I get it. They technically have a collective bargaining agreement that they signed. So, you know, they're going to have to show how there's inequality here that would break that CBA. And we did have a YouTube comment who brought up TV ratings and showing that the men's games get way more TV ratings than the women. But I think that's a sort of pedantic argument because number one, TV ratings are not as accurate as they used to be as far as telling you who's watching and who's not. I think also, Rachel, there's a case that you made that the women certainly do not get any of the promotion that the men get.
No, and ratings. I mean, so here's a thing about revenue too that I've noticed. The U.S. men's national team market their jersey sales quite frequently. There are currently no jerseys in the women's section online. So if that tells you anything about revenue and profits, then there you go. I don't know what else I can say. Yeah, the friendlies for the women, they don't nearly get the promotion enough.
Well, their league, look, even though it's own, you know, the USSF pays for it, look what they're having to put the league on. You know, Yahoo Sports, and they were on that terrible deal with Go90. I mean, when your only option for half a season is to put it on your own website because you have no other alternative, that doesn't really, when people can't watch those players outside of the national team, that has an effect. You know, when you can watch a lot of the U.S. men's players in MLS every week, yes, there's a lot of people that only watch international games and they don't watch anything else. That's not the majority, though. And I think that has an effect, too. You can't see those players outside of that time that they put on the U.S. shirt, and perhaps they don't feel an identity with those players like they would. Anything you want to...
And I mean, and we talked about that. It's like the logic of like, oh, well, TV ratings and blah, blah, blah. A, you have to put it in perspective to the percent of actual homes and actual eyeballs that TV networks get. Some are greater than others. B, you're really going into circular logic because, as Rachel said, there's all kinds of promotion and all kinds of investment into drumming up hype for MLS games, because MLS grew to be such a big league, and all the different competitions where you can see the men's players. There's never really been that much of a solid, continuous investment for that level of hype at any point on the women's level. So naturally, if you're that far behind just from a financial standpoint, the numbers are going to reflect that, and it's going to take a while to catch up, if you do at all.
No, yeah, certainly. And I think if, you know, USSF really, really cared, they'd say, what's the problem? Oh, you want equal treatment all around? Okay. Yeah, you know what? They shouldn't be staying in hotels that have bed bugs. They shouldn't be staying in... They shouldn't have to be taking connection flights when the men take direct flights. That's just stupid.
Exactly.
Like, that's the dumbest... Like, I don't get that. Like, does it really cost that much more to make sure the women are taking the same flights as the men? I mean, good lord. You know, look, I get it. It's not my money. But if they really care, they would just be like, look, the CBA doesn't matter here. Let's make this equal pay like we've been saying we want to. Equal treatment all around, equal promotion, all that stuff. And then you see if it matches up. You know, the Women's World Cup final in 2015 still holds the record for highest watched international soccer match here. So
exactly, yeah. And you're setting up more and more networks to grow and develop. Nowadays, more than ever, if you really want to move the needle, if you're a network and you have the capability, live sports programming. You see this all the time with different leagues and all throughout different sports. You're jockeying for NBA and college basketball, Premier League soccer, rugby, NASCAR, you name it. Why don't, even if you're a network, step up and say, hey, we've got voids of programming. We know certain things are going to get certain ratings and that would help us. Why don't they start making moves? If U.S. soccer doesn't, which, yes, naturally they should, there's a lot of potential meetings of the minds that could be happening right now. And everybody would win. For really, not as even as big of an investment as you would think.
Yep, certainly. Anything else you want to say on this, Rachel?
Give them their damn money.
Give them the money. So, last thing before we get into a few things about MLS here. The U.S. men's under-23 squad that is trying to hopefully qualify for the Olympics, which they have not done in quite a while. They named the team for friendlies that are happening pretty soon here. They're training in Spain, and you've got quite a list of good talent here for them to take on. You know, people question, why is Tim Weah, Josh Sargent not in the national team for these games? That's because they're here on this trip. You know, you got quite a few. The Jordi Miljevic for the Chicago Fire is here. Yeah, Carmen Carter-Vickers in defense, Julian Araujo. So, Matthew Olosonde, who's part of the Manchester United under-23, Jonathan Klinsmann. You know, so I wonder if Dad's going to be watching.
And you know he is. You know it.
So, I mean, you think the U.S. under-23s are finally going to make it?
If Jason doesn't screw it up, yeah, we've got a shot.
Yeah, man. Somebody you know quite well there, Jason Kreis. Somebody I know quite well from his playing days in Dallas, when they were the Dallas Burn. You think the diamond can happen here for the qualifying, Eric?
Lord, I hope so. I don't want to have to make international flights. They cost too much money. I've got my passport, yeah, but I don't want that revoked because somebody didn't do something right and I had to get a GoFundMe, take a trip across the world, beat a couple people up with chairs, go to jail. Jason, don't do me a favor. Don't make me do that. Make this work. And if it doesn't work, don't keep trying. think of something else. God knows, there's other formations than the diamond. It's... Yes, it exists. I can teach some to you. I've been experimenting.
Yeah, I think we forget that there's also the Under 20 World Cup happening this summer as well. So that's another tournament to add. Thankfully, that one happens before the Triple Fest in June. But yeah, I mean, you got some of these players preparing for that as well.
Well, I mean, well, with the Under 20 World Cup, it's going to be lather, rinse, repeat. We'll do great. We'll crash out in the quarterfinals and move on with our lives.
There'll be a time. There'll be a time where perhaps we can get past that. You never know. You never know. So, anything on any of these players or anything, Rachel?
The only annoyance I have is that Jonathan Lewis fits into this age ranking, yet he got a senior national team call-up. So that was kind of annoying. But other than that, it's kind of just... Don't let Jason ruin it. I mean, the players have the talent. I'm excited to see Jonathan Klinsmann.
All right. Well, Jonathan Klinsmann, make sure that you keep him out of the goal.
You have a fan of Jonathan. Loved your dad.
Well, at least he has one fan. Soccer Hall of Fame 2019 possible inductees have been announced. My God, there's a long list. I'm not going through all of them. We'll be here all day. But David Beckham is here.
No surprise.
I think he may get in. Greg Berhalter is on this list as well.
Oh, hey, Greg.
Wonder if being the national team coach will give him any kind of help or hindrance here. Carlos Bocanegra is here. Thierry Henry is here. A personal shout out to Kenny Cooper, former FC Dallas man. Ben Olsen is on here.
Pass. Eric. No.
Mitz. Heather Mitz is a good one. Shannon Box. Where's Christy Pierce at?
Abby Wambach.
Nope.
Ali Wagner. Taylor Twellman.
Sure.
Yeah.
Pablo Mastroeni, I think he's going to get in at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Tony Sané as well, Josh Wolf. So, yeah. Amy Lepeble, Lori Lindsay on here, Shannon Box.
I'm shocked that Christy Pierce Rampone isn't on here.
Simple, give her Ben's spot. Done.
Well, these
two birds, one stone.
These are the go ahead. Those are the current players. Yeah, I can't believe Chris Armas is still not in. Still, Dominic Kinnear with all his MLS championships. Surprise, Greg Vanney is on here as well in the veteran section.
Still holding. What a guy.
And then in the builders, you have Sunil Gulati, who, look, we can talk all we want about the disaster that was the last, you know, few years or whatever, but certainly he took U.S. soccer a lot of places.
Yeah. Gary Bettman did the same thing for the NHL. Would I want to still give him a swift kick in the groin? Absolutely. Sunil Gulati gives that same treatment. You did good, but you frustrate me way too much. At least you don't get the steel toes. You haven't done that bad.
That's for Ben.
It's for Sunil, too.
More Ben than Sunil. Sunil Gulati never gives me false hope. Ben does. Big difference.
Oh, gosh. All right. Rachel has to get up early in the morning, so she's going to bow out here. But as always, Rachel doing awesome work everywhere. Anything you want to promote?
someone send me chocolate for my last 4 weeks of grad school. And buckets for my tears.
If by chocolate you mean vodka, sure. I can do that.
Okay, either or. I'll make terrible decisions.
Spoken like a true Russian.
Well, it's spoken both like a true Russian and like a true grad student. Grasp on to these last few days before you really have to enter adulthood.
Oh, Lord.
Yep.
Have fun talking about SKC and Miami.
Oh, we will. Or maybe not. I don't know.
So.
Later.
Later.
All right. Should just mention really quick that Sporting KC was the only MLS team to survive going into the semifinals of the CCL.
As expected. So,
they had to come from behind to do it. They had to score 3 late goals in order to win 4-2 on aggregate. So now it's 3 Mexican teams against SKC because the other 3 teams were defeated 12-3 in margin.
Okay, so let's prepare for yet another all-Mexican final and just move on.
You know what? Peter Ramis is pretty good at these. How many U.S. Open Cups is SKC won? Yes, I know U.S. Open Cup is not the same. Anywhere near close to playing a Mexican team. And
yet you
to
make that argument!
I made the argument because he's good at cups. So, you know, Peter Ramis, well, this team is pretty feisty.
If we're getting technical with CONCACAF, they refuse to acknowledge that this is a cup. It's a league!
Well, it's not a league when they get into it. So... But, yeah, certainly, you've got Tigres and Santos have to play each other, and then Sporting KC has to play Monterrey, so...
We got the least of the three evils, which is okay, but...
unless and Liga MX final again.
Yeah, but unless we go up, they go up against a Santos, I don't like SKC's chances. I've seen Tigres, I've seen Monterrey. They can be dangerous.
We'll see. We'll see how that goes. Finally, both of us are, I live in Miami. Eric, you know, lives in Jacksonville. We don't live very far when you think about it Eric does, but...
I can make a weekend trip. I mean, granted, I've already got an opportunity if I make a day trip and happen to have $100 on me, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, so David Beckham has been trying for what seems like forever now to finally get this Inter Miami team a stadium. And because of a certain snag that is going on with the Miami Freedom Park deal, Jorge and Jose Mas are kind of just over it, and now they are deciding to take a business elsewhere, at least for the first couple of years. Inter Miami is trying to get a deal done with Fort Lauderdale in order to demolish Lockhart Stadium and build a new 18,000-seat stadium with private funding that will serve as the training facility and, you know, temporary home of Inter Miami for 2020 and 2021, while the Freedom Park deal, which is the deal that was struck, well, at least you thought it was, with the Miami City for a 73-acre redevelopment in order for them to build a 25,000-seat stadium by the Miami International Airport, where they remodeled the Mel Reese golf course. Well, they got the deal for the golf course remodel, but they don't technically have the deal to get the lease to build the stadium.
Oh, Christ. Ugh.
So, and this is Miami politics. I don't want to get into Miami politics. It's messy.
But at least you have people that care about Miami politics. I just went through a mayoral election where even the candidates didn't give a crap. And we had the lowest voter turnout in the city's history. But I have one really overarching question. Why haven't David Beckham and Derek Jeter at least sat down and had dinner? Can you answer me that question? I have a
How do you know they haven't?
If they had, then something would have happened by now. This is how star power and celebrities work. Look at LeBron James. If you've got people willing to work with you, somebody's going to know about it, and you're going to see the end results. I'm not seeing
end results.
There's a
lot of people that are scared this is going to be another Marlins Park situation anyway. This is why they're trying to block it.
No, this doesn't have to be a Marlins Park situation. That's why, again, Beckham, Jeter, sit, talk, dine, drink, what have you. Try on the new Marlins threads, which are very sweet, by the way, but that is not the point. The point is, you've already got something capable. You've already got something right there. You've already got something that's not really going to be filled half the time anyways. And you've got something that you can make work right.
You don't want to play in a freaking baseball stadium.
If you oriented right, yes, you do. Hell,
We already have this problem with the Yankee Stadium.
And that it could be some tweaks and have that fixed up. I'm not saying it's perfect. I mean, I for myself have seen it for when the Armada played at our baseball stadium at the baseball grounds downtown. It wasn't ideal, but at the very least temporarily, it works. With Marlins Park, I mean, come on. You've already had a couple of football games in there. I mean, and the thing is, at least with Yankee Stadium, I can understand. It was built for really two sports, baseball and football. It wasn't really designed for soccer. So right. I get the complaints, and I even get from the visual aspects. But do you really think, with how Marlins Park is at least set up and oriented, you couldn't make that work? I mean, even look at the changes to where they made it to where they had to scale it down just for baseball and make it less over the top. And, even in Yankee Stadium, you have a captive baseball audience. You have that whole sect of fans there. You still don't have that for the Marlins.
Well, yeah, but the New York Yankees are the freaking New York Yankees.
In my sentiments, exactly. So I get the complaints for there, but I'm saying you at least have a framework, and in Miami, you can do it better.
I don't know. I just feel like I get it from the people that are feeling this way's perspective, but I just feel like you need to have your soccer-specific stadium. I mean, this is freaking Miami. That's how you do it. David Beckham's not coming here to freaking put stuff in Marlins Park.
Or, of course, if you had the Orange Bowl still there and Marlins Park didn't even exist, then it would be even easier to solve.
Well, yeah. But, I just feel like you're, at this point, just... I just worry about, like, if Miami keeps making this a problem, does Beckham and the Moss brothers decide... You know what? Let's just do the whole thing in Fort Lauderdale.
Not if Don can help it.
Not if Don can help it, but they already gave him a freaking seat into the 28.
Oh, so, trust me. This is Don we're talking about. That's all I'm going to say. Don.
I'm just saying. We're at Fort Lauderdale, 45 minutes from Miami. Right? So... What, they let Dallas take their stadium to Frisco.
And I get that. Dallas and Frisco and Toyota Park for the Chicago Fire, that's in one of the suburbs as well. But I don't know. I don't think Don is
going to
let
I don't
let
like it because I'm not going
again.
To Fort Lauderdale to watch a game. But, like, I don't want it there because then I won't go to the stadium. But, if I'm David Beckham and I just want this thing to be over, I think you might have to consider it at that point.
But there's one thing to also mention, and you hit the nail on the head. If you're there in a captive market and you're not going to make the 45-minute trip, how many more people are like you who are deciding that same thing? It's like, it's not really that worth it to me. And look at how much revenue you're potentially losing out on. I don't think, even with the sweetheart deals, they're really going to take that hit just to get it done.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if I had a better car, I'd consider it too. That's part of my problem, is I don't really like the idea of driving my car an hour and a half both ways just to go to one game, you know.
Aside
from the gas and all the other expenses that you partake in when you go to one of these games and everything else, instead of just going to the airport, which is still far from me. The airport is far from where I live, but, like, I don't know, it's still in Miami, you know.
Yeah, there's a handful of things I will drive 45 minutes to an hour for. Going to a solitary soccer match is not one of them.
Well, I should note, it's 45 minutes if you live in actual Miami. If you live in Homestead, like me, it's farther. So, it's even further for me than the 45 minutes. So, but like, I'm just saying, at the end of the day, I think at some point, like, David Beckham might start considering that. Like, if we go through the trouble of building Fort Lauderdale a stadium that will basically be our training ground and then be home to a second team USL club and then academy teams, do we just decide, you know what, why deal with Miami's politics and just go, all right, we're just in the stadium here.
Yeah,
and they can have their redevelopment project and all the other crap.
Yeah, but then you're also going to at some point deal with Fort Lauderdale politics. That's kind of what intervened, and that's why Lockhart is in the sad position that it's in.
Yeah, but they already won 5 number one rankings to get some kind of vote of confidence here, but they are getting challenged by an FXE football group, so I don't know what's going to happen here with that either. Like you said, there could be another never-ending saga for them. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see how this goes. And this is so weird. It feels like now could be that time for this to finally happen. For if David Beckham could get a Ronaldo here. Like, that's another thing, too. It's like, would Ronaldo come if you tell him, oh, the stadium's in Fort Lauderdale instead of Miami? I don't know. Maybe that makes a difference. But
if we're talking Ronaldo, if this was, say, 5 years ago, no. But at this point, now that he's got a couple extra kids to worry about, he'd make that move.
Yeah, but I understand. Like, if Beckham puts the team on the field, makes it sexy, you know, you want to go and you want to watch this team. It's like, this might be the time to finally get that soccer spirit back into the city. Like, we've seen that it exists. You know, it exists for these, you know, the Barcelona Real Madrids or these International Champions Cup games, or we'll see if it happens for Gold Cup, you know, but
I go back to the USL Miami FC days with Romario. Passion there even at that level.
Right, it's just MLS in the early days, even with, and that was Tampa Bay, the fusion just, that kind of petered out for other reasons. I think it was more about the state of the league at that point. You know, it just, I think with the way the league is right now, I think, look, Dallas is making it work with the stadium in Frisco. They got the National Soccer Hall of Fame there, and they have one of the lowest attendances every freaking week in MLS. If Miami averages 16,000, yeah, Beckham and the Moss brothers are not going to be happy about it, but you can't really complain.
Yeah, you really can't. And I mean, if I were to even set a number on it, I would say 20. If you can target 20,000, and you know you can target 20,000, that's a good number for me for MLS attendance. That would be doable.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us here on this midweek show. We will be back on Monday for a, you know, MLS Week 4 wrap up and everything else to talk about. Then we'll do a little small show on Tuesday, just talking about the men's game against Chile. So if you like what you heard, you can always, you know, hit us up at Squid Sports Head, at WTM Sean, at Rachel McCrigger. Check out Rachel, all of Rachel's work on Last Word on Talker, which they're, you know, associated with us. We post the podcast on there. You can catch us on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. We're pretty much there. CastBox. If we're not somewhere that you want to listen to us on, let us know. I will do what we need to do to get it on there. But anyway, we appreciate everyone that does listen to us, and we'll see you in just a few days.
Peace!
Sage Dental is bringing modern, family-friendly dentistry to Hollandale Beach. Come meet Dr. Mendel and our team Friday, March 29th, and help us celebrate the grand reopening of Sage Dental in Hollandale. Enter for your chance to win a sonic toothbrush, whitening kit, or gift card, and get a free oral cancer screening just for coming by. Join us at 1701 East Hollandale Beach Boulevard, Friday, March 29th, from 1 to 3 p.m. It's the new Sage Dental for every smile.
Skydiving. This is amazing.
Yeah, but you know what else is amazing? An iPhone 6S for just $49 at Metro.
Really?
Imagine streaming all the way down with that amazing camera.
I'm switching.
That's smart.
You know what else is smart? Parachutes.
Woo!
Switch to Metro and get an amazing iPhone 6S for only $49. Metro by T-Mobile. Phone offer requires port-in of number not currently active on T-Mobile network or active on Metro in past 90 days. See store for details and terms and conditions.